Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hello friends, welcome to your Thursday edition of the Kings of Anglia podcast. This ostensibly is a build-up to the big game at Spurs this weekend. Just a reminder, friends, it's 48 days till Christmas. It'll be here before we know it. And some big fixtures over the Christmas crunch for Ipswich Town. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. Let's stay grounded and focus on the next one. Every step in the process is what we're all about here. And I'm also all about saying hello to a man who wasn't with us on Monday because he was recording another podcast in his multimedia empire. That man is... Man like the boy wonder, yeah. Roscoe, how are you?
I'm very well, getting the badge in if you're watching on video, as standard. But yeah, missed you boys on Monday. Good pod. I was actually, you know what, I just didn't want to talk about the VAR stuff because
you were bored.
I was getting a bit too, yeah, I was bored of it. But no, good to be back and getting ready for Spurs. But yeah. Introduce the other guys if you want.
How many items of Adidas clothing do you own? Sorry, not wear.
A lot, I think.
More than 20?
Probably, yeah. I've got a few of these hoodies, got a lot of tops. I'm not wearing Adidas top, actually. Don't know what this top is. But yeah, do you know what? There's actually a guy, I forgot his name, so sorry, to this guy who's at the under-21s game on Monday, and he was surprised to see me not in any Adidas. I actually wasn't wearing any Adidas. I was wearing some nice jeans, wearing a nice jacket, my green jacket that I like to wear. That isn't Adidas. And he was sort of, he had to have a second look saying, is that Ross? Oh, it is Ross.
Thought it was a fake Ross.
Yes. But yeah, it's just that my boys ate us. Just, you know, I just like it. I like the design.
Why aren't you having a word with your boys now we need a new sponsor?
Wow. In talks. We shall see.
They could get us a good chunk of change, I reckon. Sponsored by Adidas. Be quite cool, that. Someone who's very cool because he's young, but he's about to turn another year older. It's AJ. Oh. No, not used to you. Sorry, mate. Me and you, we ain't cool. AJ, how are you?
Yeah, I'm all right. It feels like this young gun is not as young as before, which is quite scary.
How old are you going to be tomorrow, you young bastard?
I'm turning 24.
Oh,
yeah,
ancient.
Mark, for those who can't see, Mark's just been sick on the screen. Stu's pulling his hair out. Ross is crying. Yeah,
24.
Not the 24. Best analogy for me, AJ.
I definitely wasn't done on purpose. Yeah. So, yeah, all good. All good other than that, but it is a bit weird. I don't know, when you were at my age and you got a year older every time, did it feel a bit weird? Does it stop
no,
after a while? You just stop caring?
Live forever, if I'm honest, at your age. And
you still might.
I definitely won't. I had no cares really in the world other than where I was going to get my next pack of fags from. Back in those days, I wasn't that. The 20s weren't my healthiest era, I must say, much to my chagrin and regret now. Shuey, you're a man of health and virility at all times. How are you?
Yeah, mega healthy and virile as we sit here and speak. Thank you.
That's what the missus tells me. Not my missus, your missus. anyway, shall we talk about football, boys, before we get myself into a big hole? Mark Ashton. We'll start with that, shall we, before we get to Spurs. There's a few things to talk about before we get to Spurs. Mark Ashton, Mr. Relentless himself, the beard, the proper beard, as opposed to Rossi's fledgling beard. He gave a long chat he had with Radio Suffolk on Monday, which obviously covered a lot of interesting ground. Fair play to Radio Suffolk for doing that live, and fair play to Ashton for doing it live, you'd have to say as well. Shuey, let's start with you, because you stayed up, as it were. You worked longer than your scheduled hours, which... It's just what we do, to listen to it. What did you make of it? What were your main takeaways?
Tiny violins being played all over Suffolk and afar. Exactly. I listened to a radio interview with Mark Ashton on Monday around tea time. I mean, first of all, you say fair play to him for doing it. It would have been very easy, I think. In the this was obviously in the diary for quite some time, and then obviously the events of the Leicester game unfolded, and I'm sure Mark Ashton was thinking, maybe this might not be the best time, because it looks from the outside that right, I need to find the first platform I've got to go out and call out the referee and have a rant about that. So. He knew that question was coming. There was a bit of chit chat at the start, and then straight into the debacle of the VAR stuff and all of that. And he had his say, and it's now created a bit more of a debate. Like, everyone's emotions were really high when we talked about it on Monday, and which was obviously when it was spoken about. I think as the fullness of time goes on, it's a bit like, park it, move on. Is there anything to be gained from this now? When Mark Ashton's talking about, I was on the phone to Howard Webb that night, and now he's coming to Portman Road this week for a face-to-face meeting. I don't really know what you can achieve from that chat. It's not like, oh yeah, we'll give you one to make up for it further down the line. You're just going to get sort of a bunch of platitudes and apologies. And it wasn't just that was covered, a whole host of subjects, and really interesting listen with Brenna Woolley, who was excellent as usual.
Yeah, I suppose going back to the VAR thing, it feels to me like, well, certainly McKenna has said essentially that, although he doesn't want to talk about it, it feels like they have to talk about it to try and make the point that they're unhappy about it, or they're not getting their fair shake, sort of thing. So I guess Ashton continuing that approach. AJ, you've done quite a bit from this as well. What stood out for you? Because he talked about all sorts of things. He talked about developing Portman Road and a move towards potential 40,000 capacity. He's talked about the January transfer window. He's talked about Liam Delap. What stood out for you?
Cool. You set me up with a lot, eh? I thought that the Portman Road stuff was quite interesting, because he's prioritised Playford Road, which, with all the work that's gone into Portman Road to bring it up to Premier League standard, you can understand. But then getting up to the plan for the 40,000 seater feels right. It feels right that they're sticking where they are and expanding, because we've spoken about this before, the location's so crucial to what they've got. And talking about kind of the plans around doing that, potentially the West Stand being the area to extend first. So the people who are going to be shifted out of the Cobbold Stand for the redevelopment there have somewhere to go, because he said you can't like put seats on the roof. Some these fans have to go somewhere. So that kind of makes sense. Cat One Academy is something that's been spoken about a lot as well, trying to get to that level. So I think that's something that people want to hear about want as well. And then, I'll touch on the January bit as well. Wanting to be brave and bold is the key tagline. Always is, isn't it? Not reckless. The two that came out with that and like... building a rocket ship is another one I quite liked. There's two kind of things. But yeah, brave and bold, but not reckless, because he knows what the profit and sustainability and FFP limits are with that. The plans are for Liam Delap not to leave unless someone puts a lot of zeros on a checkbook and comes in with a crowbar, basically, I think was what was said. But there is an acknowledgement that there is room to strengthen over January, which would be good. But I think that it's also kind of getting fans ready for, it's not going to be a repeat of the summer. They're not going to go and spend 100 million in January to try and strengthen things again. So, a well-encompassing interview.
Rossi, I'm going to put you on the spot here. So, Town are going to spend in January. Clearly, we're 2 months away from that, just under. Where do you think their priority will be in January in terms of strengthening? We know they wanted a striker. They didn't get a striker in the summer. Liam Delap has started like... his shorts are on fire. George Hurst has also done well. So do you think there's that same clamour? There will be that same clamour to get a striker? Or would you look to be spending elsewhere?
Maybe elsewhere, or maybe just someone who's versatile. I literally said when you were chatting, I was like, I was going to go a bit reckless. I was going to, go, everyone, sign them all. Get rid of all the players.
Blow the squad up in January and just start again.
Yeah, just do that. Just
play your free hit. Cook.
Yeah, one of big football games. See you later, boys. See you later, Sam Morsey and co.
Yeah.
You did your job in the championship, but you're not doing it in the Premier League. But no, that is reckless. I think maybe some more Premier League experience potentially. So I think that's what a lot of fans are saying to me at the moment. They're just a bit worried that we haven't got that Premier League experience, and maybe some you know, 10 games in, we haven't won a game. And they played well. There has been some positives, but maybe in January, if players are available, because January is not a good market, is it, really? And yeah, trying to sign a striker in January, good luck, because who's going to sell their striker? Like, we got Kiefer Moore last year because, you know, he wasn't playing for Bournemouth and he obviously dropping down to the Championship. But yeah, maybe that could be a position we could strengthen him. Right back, potentially, although Axel could be back by then. But yeah, I'm sure McKenna will have his with his targets in mind. But yeah, it will be an interesting window, but it'll be our first ever Premier League, you know, January transfer window, which will be very interesting indeed. Get ready for the rumours, boys. Get ready.
Oh, God. You know what their first priority should be, Stu? Buy Axel Tuanzebe a dishwasher. And I've got to go and get my door, friends. So I'll leave you with that thought. Talk amongst yourselves, because my final piece of the kitchen may have just arrived. Bear with me.
Okay. For listeners, we were pre-warned about this before we started recording. Mark informed us that he had to go because, was it the final piece of his kitchen is arriving today from Germany? And if he doesn't answer the door, it will return to Germany. And as we all know from bad news, good news the other week, you know, we need this kitchen installed, don't we, for everybody's good, not just Mark's.
I'm slightly concerned that if it got sent back to Germany, I just have visions of him like running down the street chasing after a van as it like speeds towards the airport to be sent back and him just going, no, wait, come back. But hopefully this all gets sorted now because we had that fun little period where he didn't show up on podcasts just because he was...
People drilling downstairs. In his, yeah,
people were drilling in his kitchen. They were getting drilled in his kitchen. So that was a fairly big problem.
I thought you was going to go into a football chant there. Drilled in his kitchen. He's back. He's getting drilled in his kitchen. What's this last piece of the kitchen that's
didn't
arrived?
Have time for that.
The door handle.
No, no. It's literally like one panel for the wall. So the bit that sits above the kitchen bar, breakfast bar, whatever you call it, they sent the wrong colour. So everything else was fine. They sent the wrong colour for this final panel. Which means that our kitchen is not yet finished. We've got like a bit that's not been painted and the sockets out all and that kind of stuff. And it's been like that for a month. So I couldn't miss that final panel arriving all the way from Germany because I feared it's taken a month for them to do it. And I feared it might take another month to get it back if I didn't answer the door. Anyway, so what have I missed, boys, while I've been away?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Okay. Did you answer my question about January, indeed, anything else that you've
no, we talked about your kitchen.
We were singing about your kitchen.
Excellent. My kitchen is lovely, boys, I'll be honest. Stu, question to you then, just to round off the Ashton stuff. Anything else that stands out for you? Any thoughts early on what we talked about there with the January transfer window?
Far too early for me to be thinking about January, Mark, one game at a time.
Exactly.
I don't know, it genuinely threw me a little bit when you said about that, because it's one thing trying to pick out areas that they could improve, but we're talking, you know, just throwing about the right back situation, but Ben Johnson's just had a really good game. Axel Tuanzebe will hopefully be kind of fit in the next few weeks or so. So situations can change. I'm sure there'll be, you know, we've had injuries so far. I'm sure there'll be more injuries, which will change the situation. Obviously, you know, George Hirst going off on Boxing Day completely changed the last transfer window. So we'll have to see what the picture is come then. But, you know, Ross is right before you could take loan players from the division above. That is, you know, that's not a market now that's available really to Ipswich Town. I guess you do see Premier League clubs loaning players out. We saw it with Leicester having Buonanotte on loan from Brighton this season, for example. Yeah, we'll have to wait and see. Players you get in January normally come for a reason. They're getting them up to speed because they're coming back from an injury or... We'll see. But no, the Ashton stuff, there was loads of good stuff in there. I think we've covered a few points in there. But I would just say, if you haven't listened to it, really good hour. It's on BBC Sounds. Have a little listen back to that. Great stuff.
We'll just go and read our stories from it. That's probably the best way to consume it. anyway, before we get to Spurs, Stu, we're going to do predictions. Now then, 10 games down, 5 points on the board. Another 5-game block coming up. You're writing predictions for that 5-game block, which will be online tomorrow morning. So I thought, rather than you reveal ahead of time what you've predicted, you could lead this segment and we could all give our own thoughts on the upcoming games. So I now pass the host's baton virtually over to you. You've taken it with both hands. Now it's your time to run with it, friends.
Ooh, feel the power. Okay. Next five games, we kind of do these little predictions for the next block of games. And the last five, I don't think I was wildly out. I'll do a quick recap of that. So the last five games started with Aston Villa, which unsurprisingly, I think all of us went for a defeat on that and were pleasantly surprised by the draw that could have been a win. Mm-hmm. What did we have after Aston Villa? He's having a quick look at
West Ham
board in front of us. Then we had West Ham, Everton, both defeats. Not very well prepared here. Brentford away and then Leicester at home. So I had 5 points for those five games, which at the time I think was probably at the lower end of our prediction scale. I think that might have even been the lowest out of the five. And in the end, Ipswich ended up with, what did they end up with? Two points for the Leicester draw and the Villa draw with three defeats in between. But, you know, it could have been more. It should have been more, couldn't it? You know, Brentford really should have been a draw. Leicester should have been a win. So I wasn't too far out. I think five was a decent shout. So that gives us a bit of a backdrop to the next five coming up. So we all know what's coming up on Sunday. Tottenham away. Tottenham Hotspur. Do you want a little bit of background to that? We'll probably go into it a little bit more detail, but Tottenham don't need a great deal of introduction, do they? I had a little look. They finished in the top half of the Premier League for 16 successive seasons, Tottenham Hotspur. So as established as you get as a Premier League club, loads of household names, and they're doing pretty nicely at home so far this season. 4-1 win against Villa last time out. How are we feeling about this one, boys? We may as well jump to some prediction times about this. The one cause for optimism here is that they go to Galatasaray tonight in the Europa League. As intimidating place to go to, that is, and it's only, what, little under 72 hours or a little more than 72 hours before kickoff on Sunday afternoon. What do we reckon?
Let's hope for lots of injuries, first of all, tonight for Spurs.
Well, on the injury front, that is another little cause for optimism, is their two centre-halves are out at the moment. Mickey van der Ven, who went on that ridiculous run to set up a goal against Man United. A lot of hype around him. He's injured, went off in tears the other week with a hamstring injury. And then Christian Romero went off with a foot injury, I think, midway through their last game as well. So both first-choice centre-halves out at the moment, which is another little chink of light, I guess, for Ipswich Town going into this one.
Mickey van der Ven, the fastest player in the Premier League, officially. Right, I'll go first. We may as well do this sort of in this order. So me, then Alex, then Rossi. Clearly, we're going to be predicting this at the end, and Stu will have to give his prediction. So I'll have to try and remember my prediction from this point. But let's be honest, friends. Let's be realistic. This is going to be a defeat. I'd say Spurs 3, Ipswich 1.
God damn it, Heath. okay, right. I'll go down.
Did you two literally have 3-1 in your mind as well?
Yeah.
The reaction there suggests that both Alex and Ross wanted that. Because remarkably, spoiler alert, I've also got 3-1 Spurs that I've written. So that's a full house.
Well, I'm not going to go with that. I'm going to go with a few more Gary goals here. And the reason is because, and I've done a little segment on this, so you'll be able to read on my meet the opposition bit. Tottenham and set pieces, right? Now, I know that Ipswich and set piece haven't been a wonderful combination, but Tottenham concede a hell of a lot of them. Since Ange Postecoglou came in, only one team have conceded more than them. And he gets asked about this every time, and he says, I don't care. And then he gets asked about it again, and says, oh, well, I take responsibility, mate, stuff like that. Now, I think there's a way to hurt them. And I think with, as Stu mentions, the centre-backs out, with Romero and Van der Ven out, it's probably going to be Dragusin and Davis, both kind of natural left-siders. I think it's a little bit higgledy-piggledy. And I think that there's ways to hurt Tottenham. So I'm going to go with, I think it will be a defeat, but I think that there's a couple of goals in this trip, so I'm going to go 3-2 Tottenham.
Gary goals, I like it.
Yeah.
Go on, Rossi.
Do you know what? I'm going to switch it to a draw. No, I'm not. although, you know...
You never know. You never know with Spurs.
Spurs got beaten by Palace the other week.
Yeah.
And we'll be predicting Town Palace in this, you know, next, you know, five, you know, block of games. So, but no, I do think a defeat here. I do hope Spurs do a Spursy, but I just can't see it. Maybe actually I'll bring it down to 2-1. Town will be more in it than before. But yeah, it was weird that all four of us had 3-1s in our minds. Don't know what that says about us, but yeah, there we go.
Well, I feel like in the spirit of the game, I should change mine. Not as confident as you boys. I've mentioned a few causes for optimism here, but I had a little tot up of the squad. I think that's 550 million plus worth of transfer fees for Spurs going through it. Most of them are kind of 20 million plus. I know they've got this Galatasaray game, but they've been, I don't know what sort of team he'll put out tonight, but he's been rotating for the Europa League. They've got two good players for positions. I know we've talked about centre-half. And it's the, if this was at Portman Road, I think I would be a bit more optimistic about it. But I look at their home form and they've won 7 out of their 8 games at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium this season. Arsenal's the only one that they haven't won, a narrow defeat there. 4-0 v Everton, 4-1 v West Ham, 4-1 v Villa last time out. Solanke with a confident boosting couple of goals last time. So reluctantly, I'll up it to 4-1 Tottenham. They're the top goal scorers in the Premier League, by the way.
Are they? Okay. Next
up, international break, yawn. And then after we come back from that, it will be the first game back at Portman Road since the Leicester controversy. So it might be a bit of fire in the bellies of the fans going into that one. And hashtag narrative galore in the dugouts as Manchester United come to Suffolk with a new manager at the helm for the first time in Ruben Amorim, who has done a remarkable job at Sporting Lisbon, the Portuguese. Big job on his hands to be the latest man to try and turn around the fortunes of... how do we describe Manchester United? They're not quite sleeping giants, but they're not the force that they have been for quite some time now.
They're definitely a giant with narcolepsy.
Yeah, exactly. So, obviously, Kieran McKenna... grew up a Manchester United fan, was assistant manager there to Solskjaer, Mourinho and co, was heavily linked to the job back in the summer himself. So, yeah, looking forward to this one. It's going to be very interesting. And probably out of these whole bunch of predictions, this was the one that I probably found most difficult, I would say. So I'll throw, who wants to start with this one? Go on.
I want to start because one of my hot takes before the season, well, I predicted, didn't I, that they would beat Town would beat two of the big eight, and I said Villa and United. United was the one I really thought they would beat because of all the hashtag narrative around it. McKenna is going to go to the nth degree to get one in this game. Now there's even more narrative. This couldn't be really a bigger, sexier game, could it, for Ipswich Town? And I'm still going to stick with that. I think in Amorim's first game in charge of United, I think McKenna's going to get one over, and that would be a famous victory. I'm going to say... Oh, God. Do you know what? I think it might be one of those like 1-0s where United have loads of chances but just can't score. It's a curse of, you know, United, a new boss, and Town probably grab one and win 1-0. And how good would that be? Of course, looking at the form, Amorim had his own little pre-Man United Manchester derby, didn't he? Did pretty well in that one earlier this week. But I'm going to say 1-0 to Town. And I really hope that's the case because that would be a famous night at Portman Road or late afternoon. So I'll say 1-0.
I think this is a bit of a, I don't want to say a nightmare game for Manchester United. That would probably be pushing it a little bit too far. But I think it's a bit of a tricky one, this, with a new manager coming in. A lot of this squad are going to be out on international duty. So he's got to deal with a move to a different country where he's got to organise everything at the club, his personal life, all of that. He's got to prepare his team for, this is what I want. I want to play a back five. I want to do this. This is going to be different. And then he's got to prepare for what Ipswich are going to pose. And I do think that that then throws in a lot of banana skins to overcome. Add to the fact that this entire game, no one outside of Ipswich fans are going to care about Ipswich going into this game. No, the narrative, the national outlook, it's all going to be Man United. All the pressure is on them. And I think that works so well in this game. Well enough to get a win. I'm not quite going that far. I do think this will... I'm going for a 2-2. I see this being another bit of, as I've now said, Gary Goals in this one. I think that it will be one of those two draws, a bit like the Villa game, where they're going to come away from it thinking we have chances to win that. But as I said, not an ideal kind of preparation period, I don't think, for Man United.
Go on, Roscoe.
Just a little moment here just to give tense up there. Is Roscoe going to do a win? He's not going to do a win. We're going to lose. We're going to lose 2-1. I don't know. Just I feel weird about this one. A few weeks ago, if they had Ten Hag still in charge, I went, yeah, Town, easy win. McKenna. Ah, that's why you should have McKenna Man United. But no, I just don't know. New manager bounce. Super Sunday. I know the TV curse is out of there now. We got rid of that in League One, but I don't know. Don't feel that confident about this game. After the international break as well, you know, I don't know. I just don't feel good about this game. Man United as well. I'm hoping to have that Fabian Wilness moment, that goal. That was obviously earlier in the first home game of that Premier League season. I hope we have a moment like that. But I don't know. I just think this we'll lose this one late on, maybe 2-1. So, two defeats in a row for me.
Yeah, that's on Sunday at a 4:30 kickoff on Sky. Just to add to the narrative around that game. Did we decide that I wasn't going to reveal mine? So we've got a win, a draw, and a defeat there. If you want to see what I've gone with, have a little look online at the piece I've written tomorrow. Following weekend, a game that on paper, probably at the start of the season, we'd have been going opportunity for Ipswich. Less so now after the start to the season when you look at the form guide. Nottingham Forest, a trip to the City Ground on a rare Saturday, 3 p.m. We haven't got many of those coming up. Nuno Espirito Santo's side sit third in the table at the moment. Chris Wood, much talked about in Alex and Ross's FPL pod. 8 goals already this season in 10 games. And Forest, at the other end, have only conceded 7. They've won at Liverpool. They've got a draw at Chelsea. This game for them falls within a trip to Arsenal beforehand. And then after this one, they go to Manchester City. So they'll be looking at this home game against Ipswich, I'm sure, as an opportunity. But Ipswich will think that they can go there, I'm sure, and get something as well. So Nottingham Forest, who wants to kick us off for this one?
I'll go. Might as well keep the same order. Number one, how funny would it be if Man United do lose to Ipswich in Amorim's first game? Can you imagine the meltdown that would provoke amongst Man United fans? Anyway, can I manage to be under pressure after one defeat of this first game? We'll find out.
You can certainly see the kind of the analysis afterwards being, you know, you can't turn around a giant like Man United in one day, and this is evidence of the job that he's got on his hands. Kind of, he's got to have a bit of a clear out of some of these, you know, expensive flops that are taking up the wage bill, etc., etc. So let's hope it pans out that way.
Yeah, that would be hilarious. Right then, Forest. I wisely, sagely predicted that Forest would be among the three to get relegated this season. That's gone well. And obviously on paper, this does not look like a good game for Ipswich Town. Clearly, if they have just been Man United and they're going to Forest all full of confidence and vigour, things might be different, but looking at it as a standalone game now on paper, it's hard to make a case that Town are going to go to Forest and get anything, particularly given they've been pretty rubbish away from home. So I will say, realistically, probably a defeat. Probably Chris Wood gets 2 or 3 goals, unless I brought him in for my FPL side. Maybe I'll do that. So I'll say 2-0 Forest.
God almighty. Okay, right. This is a very big game for Nottingham Forest because their run, I mean, she's kind of alluded to their 5-game block is Newcastle home, Arsenal away, Town, City away, United away, and the one after that's Villa at home. So when you look at a winnable one in there, they'll be picking out this game against Ipswich. do think they'll win it. I think it's going to be one of those where it feels a little bit like, do you remember the West Brom away game last season where they were just clinical and experienced and defensively solid, which is why I was going to go for the same score in that. And you know what? There's no rules actually to say that I can't do that, is there? So I'm also going to go 2-0 to Nottingham Forest for that one.
These games are starting to now be several weeks ahead of us now. So I reserve the right, as always, little asterisks that we can we can change these when we get to the pre-match pods. But just for a bit of fun now. Ross, are you completing the set?
Oh, am I going to be a negative Nancy? Because I've done two defeats in a row there. I'm not, though. No loser in this pack, but they won't win a game. It'll be a draw. I think it'll be like the Brighton game, potentially, where they are just getting hammered, just like Mark Keith's kitchen. That wasn't that great. They would have drilled it. Would they used hammers?
Viewers will have just seen that Mark took a very untimely sip of coffee as talk of his kitchen getting hammered.
Oh, I love you, Rossi. That's absolutely tremendous. Somehow segueing from the Nottingham Forest game into an analysis about whether my kitchen used hammers to be put together. Tremendous. I can confirm there were hammers used. There was quite a lot of drills as well. There's all sorts of power tools used to create my kitchen. But yeah, I almost sprayed coffee all over the screen then. So thanks for that. I'll let you
make your prediction. IT, I need a new laptop. I think Muric will be getting hammered in this game with loads of shots at him. But just like the Brighton game, I think Town will be able to keep into it. So it won't be a goalless draw. It'll be a 1-1 draw. Chris Wood will score, but Town will da-dap. He'll score. That'll be a nice point on the road. I'll take that right now. I want to get off the bus. So yeah, a draw there just to bring a bit of positivity in my prediction so far, because I've gone for two back-to-back defeats.
Spectacular. Right. Then finally, we don't have to wait too long for the next game. Finally, we get ourselves a midweek game of football involving Ipswich Town at Portman Road under the lights, Tuesday night, December the 3rd. Against Crystal Palace. I was having a look back for the last time we've had kind of midweek games, certainly at home. I think it would have been the Watford game at the back end of the promotion campaign, which is going back to sort of April time, isn't it? So it's been a long time. Always feels something a bit more magical, doesn't it? Portman Road under the lights, as I say. Crystal Palace, we talked about sort of Forest being a bit of a surprise package in a positive sense so far. I would say the opposite has been the case with Crystal Palace, who finished last season on absolute fire after Oliver Glasner came in. I think they won six of their last seven, something like that, to finish in a comfortable mid-table position. Yes, Michael Olise went for mega money to Bayern Munich in the summer, but they kept people like Gay and Eze, who were much sought after. And then they were in that pack of sides that just couldn't get a win at the start of the season alongside Ipswich. An eight-game winless start. They ended that by finally beating Spurs 1-0 at home recently. A few little injury problems starting to mount up at the moment. Eze, one of them. Adam Wharton, another. Two key players who, looking at the timeline for their recovery, might be kind of around the time of the Ipswich game. So we'll have to kind of wait and see what their involvement is. Crystal Palace, have they been in a false position so far? Do we expect them to pick up? It's at Portman Road. It's Tuesday night. What are we saying?
Another example of my brilliant pre-season predictions, because while I predicted Forest to go down and they're now in third, I predicted Palace to be the surprise package in a positive way. Although if they do indeed struggle, I might claim it the other way at the end of the season. That's what I thought. Under the lights at Portman Road, in my mind, coming off beating Man United in a famous victory, I'm going to say they make it back-to-back wins at Portman Road. Portman Road is going to be the key to staying up this season, isn't it? Let's be honest. So I'm going to say they beat Crystal Palace 2-1 at Portman Road, which would be tremendous. And I think that's two wins out of four games I've predicted. Quite positive indeed. I'm assuming, Alex, I haven't nicked your prediction there.
No, you have not. Interesting one, this. I do wonder, I think this next set of games for Crystal Palace is crucial, because if they do go badly wrong, will it be Oliver Glasner in the dugout? Will it be Roy Hodgson again? Who knows? Potentially. They might cart him out again. I don't know how old he is. Maybe even older than the upcoming president of the United States. We don't know. In terms of what I think with this one, yeah, the injuries, I understand that it's probably going to have that feeling of a real opportunity. I also think it's going to be one which is harder than it maybe looks on paper. I wouldn't say that Crystal Palace have been in a false position, because they've not been great. Let's put it that way. But they do have the quality to come good, and I do think that they will. And I do just think the experience and the England internationals and all that add up. And I'm going to go with a 1-1 draw in this one.
Sorry, you know me. I need to be told to say something. I don't know. I'm a polite young man.
We've established the flow of this now. We don't need dramatic tension for the Palace one.
I know. But yes, I'm going to go for a win, though, boys. First Premier League win. I just feel, under the lights, as you said before, it just feels special. And the first under the light game in the Premier League for 20 years, over 20 years. And the last time we played Palace was under the lights in 2013. Frank Noble scored twice, and Aaron Cresswell scored an absolute screamer. So you know what? It's going to be a 3-0 win. Why not? Under lights, Kieran McKenna ball. Town fans will be bouncing. Who will score twice? So, yeah, I'm going to do the same. Yeah, 3-0. Two goals. Who doesn't normally score? We're not doing goal scorers, are we? Actually, we'll stop doing this ramble. But yeah, 3-0 win. First win on the against Palace. I'll take that.
Who would be the equivalent of like the Frank Noble brace now? I'm probably doing him dirty a little bit, but Ali Alhamadi, I guess, would be the equivalent now. Someone like that coming in. And you could, those Noble goals, from what I remember, were classic Frank Noble goals, where he just basically charged down the centre half and full of energy. Lacking a little bit in technical ability was Frank during his time at Ipswich, but they were just kind of perseverance goals, and you could see sort of Ali Alhamadi doing that.
And Leif Damer screamer. Yeah,
you heard it here first. Right, last game of the block. It's another Portman Road game, just a few days later, and it's Bournemouth, who very nicely established in the Premier League now. And they've started very nicely this season too. Some statement wins against Arsenal and Manchester City down on the South Coast at the Vitality Stadium. Away from home, they have lost at Leicester and West Ham as well. So that's a little bit of cause for optimism for Ipswich going into this one. And they play, I don't know why, but they play on a Thursday night. They play a Premier League game against Spurs. On the Thursday leading up to this one. So Ipswich play on the Tuesday, but Bournemouth will play on the Thursday. And then the two of them meet at Portman Road on the Saturday. So a little bit of extra rest for Ipswich Town going into this one. Make of that what you will. They're looking good under Iriola at the moment. Certainly easy on the eye. They're right up there in terms of chances created this season. What do we reckon?
Notes first of all from what the last round of conversations. I would rather Roy Hodgson be in charge of America than Donald Trump. Made the mistake of tweeting about politics earlier this week, shouldn't have done that. And Rossi, in terms of Frank Noble, I remember someone we used to work with genuinely felt quite passionately that he would be a better striker than Frank Noble. And this was a guy who at the time was in his late 50s, genuinely thought that he would be better than Frank Noble. We used to have arguments about this quite a lot. In terms of this game, I'm going to keep positive. I don't think they'll beat Bournemouth at Portman Road, but I think they might get a draw. I'm sticking to this positivity around Portman Road. It's going to be key for Town. So I will say 1-1. 1-1, which I think means I've made, 7 points out of the five games, which would be obviously brilliant. If we can do that, that'd be great. So I'm saying 1-1.
Point of order for this one. Stu did say this was a Saturday 3. It is a Sunday 2. Because otherwise, that would be,
apologies. Yeah,
that would be very on Saturday. Yeah, don't, please, guys, don't. I've been saying for ages, for some reason, I've got in my head that the Palace game is away, and I think I've written it by accident at least twice this season, which has not been ideal. But yeah, that would be a very harsh turnaround if Bournemouth.
You're right. Sunday, December the 8th, 2 p.m. And that's probably because they play on the Thursday. Yeah. So yeah,
it would be a very unfair trip up from the South Coast if they had to do that on the Saturday. Nonetheless, I think that plays a part. Bournemouth were my surprise package in pre-season. I think that's all right. I don't think it's gone. Yeah, they're 10th. They're fine. They're all right. So I'll take that. Of the three of us, I'm the only one yet to predict a win, which is, I mean, God knows how, it's that like 6 or 7 months now at this point between wins. And I'm going to make it this one. I think that this is going to be the game. I don't really know what to say about this because it's so far away. Bournemouth kind of just a fine team. And I just think, why not? Everything's going to click. I think that the travel might be quite heavy for Bournemouth, regardless of the fact they're going on Sunday. They're still going to have to get there for the Saturday, things like that. It's winter. It'll be cold. Town fans are going to be absolutely desperate for a win if it's my run of form. So, yeah, I think this will be the one where it all clicks into place and they finally get it with no VAR meddling or anything like that. Go on, Ross.
That'd be game 15 that the first win comes, if you're correct.
Ooh. Blimey.
Oh, dear.
Did you predict a score there, AJ? I didn't hear a score.
Oh, I didn't. No, you're right. Sorry, I just said that they were going to win. Yeah, I'll go 2-1.
2-1. Standard prediction. I've gone for a, you know, undefeated run of two games here, you know, draw and a win. I'm going to make it 3 games unbeaten for Town, but it's going to be a draw. Bournemouth, you know, don't... They're a good team, Bournemouth, ladies and gentlemen. Don't, you know, go into this game and think, oh, it's only Bournemouth. They've got some good players. I even spoke about on the FPL pod about bringing in Semenyo, who I know Stu's got on his team. So, yeah, I'm going to go for a Desmond. Do like a Desmond. So, 2-2, goals galore at Portland Road. And I think that'll be a good point. Be a good point because Bournemouth, they'll still be up there. I'm just now, big question for you boys to end this little segment. Or maybe Stu's got another question as well. But are Town going to be out of the relegation zone or are they going to be still in the bottom three?
Well, based on my run of form, they'll be lucky not to be bottom, probably. So, yeah, I'll say they won't be bottom. You know what? I think there's going to be someone who has a horrible run, but I do think they'll probably will be plugging away in the bottom three still.
If mine comes to pass and they do get 7 points from the next 5, they probably won't be in the bottom three, which would be tremendous. But clearly, my history of predictions is not strong. So, probably most unlikely.
Well, there's no guarantee. I mean, just to round up, we've got Mark on 7 points, and then I believe both Alex and Ross have got 5 points from the next 5. So that would be an improvement on the last block. It would be improvement on the first block, obviously. So that would represent progress. I think a point a game is what Ipswich need to be aiming for. In years gone past, that was always kind of the magic number that if you got a point per game, you would be okay. Around that sort of 38 to 40 was always the number that people put on it. But I think that number was obviously a lot lower last year. And I think it will be probably nearer those numbers again this year. So, that has Ipswich on around. So they're on 4 now. That will take them to sort of around 9 to 11 points, depending on which end of your predictions they come in after 15 games. So, yeah, their chances are they would be kind of probably still in the relegation zone, but hopefully still in touch. And then we'd be talking about some Christmas fixtures coming up after that that involves the likes of Arsenal and Chelsea and the like as well. So, interesting. Interesting few fixtures ahead.
Yeah, Christmas looks dead easy, doesn't it, boys? No problem at all. 3 straight wins over Christmas, I reckon. I enjoyed that, Stu. Thanks for taking the hosting pressure off my shoulders for 20 minutes or so. But I'll now seize it back because we've got to address an injustice we've done to Rossi on this podcast. A listener by the name of David Johnson. Not the first one or indeed the second one. A standalone David Johnson. What says that? He says, we regularly hear about a day in the life of the scribes. That's AJ, Stu, and even me. But nothing from Ross, who I reckon gets a raw deal. Although I have no special interest in photography, I would like to hear Ross talk about his specialist subject for a change. The cameras, the lenses, the best angles, his best moments or pictures he's most proud of. Cheers, David Johnson, brackets, no relation, exclamation mark. Rossi, we have been overlooking you. We've been forcing you to hide your light under a bushel for the period of this podcast, and I apologise to you. The floor is now yours, friend, to talk in great depth about the size of your lens and indeed the best things you've ever done with it.
Do you want me to get it out? Or
No, we don't need to labour that.
No. Well, I'm just going to remove you all from the call and it will just be me on the screen. My moments. So yeah, I'm just going to do it now. See you later, Evie. See you later, AJ. So that's so it's just me, ladies and gentlemen. Now I'm going to bring him back because I feel very scared.
That immediately made my bum hole pucker.
We've all changed around.
Yeah, you watched the video. I'm on top left now. I think this
Ross
is the
flying solo on a KOA pod. Oh dear, oh dear.
Wow. I've been in the host chair a few times.
I know, but you've never been literally flying solo. Just made me nervous, Ross, especially when we've just been talking about various double entendres. I wondered how far you might go. But anyway, let's get back to the question. Talk to us about your photography. What's your what's your best ever moments and little insights into your life as a snapper?
I think my favourite moment is going to Denham United with the women's team. No, there was horses, and the game was so bad. I started taking pictures of the horses in the background instead of the match because it was a rubbish game.
Sorry, where were the horses?
So this football ground was just next to like a field.
Oh, okay. And
so yeah. The game wasn't that great, so I just turned around and just took pictures of the horses. But obviously the last few years have been incredible in terms of, you know, back-to-back promotions, so just capturing moments. I think George Hurst's goal against Barnsley, I got a really great celebration picture, and that was a moment where we just all knew Town were going to go back to the Championship.
Was that the one of was it him and Chappers standing in front of the away fans, like kind of?
Not that, no, that was good old Warren Page. But the one, when George Hurst, that was the opening goal of that game, and it was just George Hurst with his arms out, and it was just right in front of me, and, you know, it was just a beautiful moment. Obviously, you know, just on the pitch for the, you know, Championship, you know, promotion, just capturing, the players and even the fans. That was, you know, just a great moment. You know, as a boyhood Town fan, just being on that pitch, you know, taking pictures of this moment, as you mentioned prior to that match, you know, make sure to take as many pictures as possible because these pictures will be looked at in 40 years' time, blah, blah, blah. Because that's what we do for the 2000s promotion, don't we? We look back at those pictures, even the FA Cup final, the UEFA Cup win as well. But yeah, the camera itself, just got two, you know, solid cameras that have treated me well for the last few years. I've got a 30-meter lens that does me good. 2.8, if you're asking, aperture. I'm not maybe as passionate as some photographers. Good old Warren Page, who covered the club for so long, he was more in depth in terms of, you know, different settings and stuff. But for me, I have to admit, I do wing it a lot.
Just put it on auto.
Never auto. Autofocus, because you have to do that. If you do it manually, you just all your photos can be out of focus. But yeah, sometimes I do just wing it. Definitely when it's terrible lighting, when it's the sun is out, when it comes in and out, and you've got like a bit of shadow. Like Porton Road is actually the worst for me. I don't actually enjoy taking pictures of Porton Road because when the sun is, there is like, I don't know if you boys, when you see, half the pitch is in shadows and the rest is in sunlight. And when the player goes in, oh, dearie me, you have to change the settings and... thanks, David, for asking. I'm not as passionate as some photographers because I just wing it sometimes. But I have had a great journey from, you know, covering like non-league football to now Premier League football. I have a nice little, we call it in the biz, a nice little widey, camera widey, where it's just a nice little lens when when the players come close. And you have to, you know, if they're on top of you.
Do you operate a two-camera system then? I've seen, I've been at events where a photographer's got one camera and he's got another one kind of clipped to a belt that he can, if he needs to change, he just like whips it out like a gun almost. Is that how you operate on match day?
I haven't got a belt, but yeah, I've got one just next to me. So I've got the zoomy one, and then you've got the one that's, you know, just there, just in case they come up close and personal. So I think good old Steve Waller, now a photographer we have, he got a really good picture of Leif Davis. He would have used a nice little widey. I was the other end of the pitch, so I couldn't get any of that celebration. So I was just watching, just like, yeah, great goal. But yeah, if you want to know more, I think I have done, well, I spoke about this many times on the podcast, but yeah, it's my time to shine. I'm a humble man, to be fair. I don't like to gloat. But I will admit, us photographers are peasants in the media world, ladies and gentlemen. We get chucked in a, you know, a storage room normally, while Stu and AJ get all the glam in their little.
You've got your
room.
Own special looking room at Portman Road now.
Yeah,
don't even have to go up the stairs.
I was going to ask, what are they like? Like, I've got a couple of questions. Firstly, what are the photographers' rooms like? Because I know that some of them look quite nice. Then we also have, I don't want to name names, but I'm going to have to say Southampton, where we get treated really nicely, and the Saints, unfortunately, don't quite have the same kind of treatment for you. Or Huddersfield was another one where you didn't even have a room. They just sent you stand in the rain. What's it like in the photographers' rooms and the photographer treatment in the football world?
Yeah, it's not good, to be fair. In the Premier League, obviously now we are with you for some games. But yeah, Southampton, once again, they just chucked us in a random room just, and there was nothing. I had to go into the concourse, get a hot dog. Well, I saw you guys get, you know, a curry or whatever. But, you know, I know Stu's going about to say, that's where you belong. That's where you guys belong. But, yeah, I'm hoping Spurs. I think we are hopefully together. But if not, I don't know, we'll be somewhere.
Can I also ask about kind of the multitasking behind this? Because it is obviously taking photos in with this. But you've then got to upload them for me and Stu to be able to access, to be able to put into reports, onto live blogs, onto Twitter, things like that. Talk us through your process of doing that, because most of the time it runs smoothly. Sometimes, like, you have files corrupting or SD cards going all over the place. So you, well, I remember it happening once, which in fairness is a very good success rate so far. But yeah, talk us through that.
Yeah, I've got a different setup to some photographers. I do it all on my phone. There's some photographers, they get their laptop out and they do it that way. Also, I like about our system, we don't have to worry about doing captions anymore as photographers, because you guys have to do that now, which is very nice indeed. That saves time. But yeah, we put it in the Google Drive. Other drives of other companies are available, if that's the thing. But yeah, I just put the little stick into my phone, and then all the pictures come up, and I pick the ones I like. Oh, that's out of focus. Damn it. And, you know, hopefully they're all in focus. And then I put them in the system, and then you guys obviously download them and go from there. And as I said, caption them. So it can be a good process, but when there is a lot of action, a lot of things happening, trying to put them in, because obviously I don't want to miss any of the action, but there's a few times I have missed goals and chances because you are putting them in the system. So yeah, I probably have missed some absolute weldies because, you know, I'm trying to send a photo over. But yeah, half time. You know, that's when you are live, you know, you're trying to get all the pictures through. And at full time as well, my job's a bit different to another photographer's, because they can sit down and have a little, you know, go through all their photos. I'm going outside, obviously, to do game day, doing interviews, and then coming up, editing game day. And that's when I then edit all my photos, because, you know, I've done game day and it's all sorted. And then, of course, you boys, you do your video. So, yeah, my day is a bit different to maybe some other photographers, because that's their main focus on the day. Obviously, I'm the video man as well, so got to make sure to get the behind-the-scenes stuff and also speak to the Cowley Army.
You're all things to all people, Rossi. Hopefully, friends, you've seen through the code that Rossi used there when he said other photographers are more passionate. What he means are nerdy about photography and aperture number one and all that kind of stuff. Stop talking, it's dull. let me ask you one final question, Rossi, by way of ending this chat. You've done a lot already in your young career. You've gone from, as you say, covering non-league all the way up to the Premier League. You've been to the O2 to cover big fight events. You've been to Wembley to cover international games. What is there, if you could have one thing on earth that you could take pictures of, keep it clean, what would it be?
I've never really thought of that. I'm just appreciating that what I've got so far, because, you know,
well,
I never
think about it now. A sporting event, it could be a world happening, it could be your girl Riri in concert somewhere.
Girl Riri. Do you know what? That's it, probably.
Is it?
Yeah. Yeah. I've been able to take a few, I've done some gig photography in the past, and I'm a big fan of Georgia Smith as well. And I've been able to take pictures of her. So, in concert, not what you're thinking. So yeah, that was a highlight, because I also loved their music, and just when I got told I'm going to be going and take pictures, I was really happy. So yeah, Riri probably, or like Olympics, maybe cover Olympics. That'd be good fun, just doing different sports. So yeah, or maybe doing a World Cup, maybe just covering all the different teams. Doing my boys, Azzurri, Italy, you know, that'd be good. And obviously England, obviously, you know,
yeah.
But they'll lose, boring. They'll lose. So, but yeah, they're boring. So, but yeah, probably Riri, maybe. And I don't know, hopefully she's performing again soon.
Talking of Rihanna, somebody texted me the other day that said Man United had a player on the bench who was born the week that Umbrella came out, that Umbrella was number one. And I refuse to believe it, because Rihanna's modern music to me, and I'm not hearing otherwise.
When was that? That kind of, what, 2004? Five?
Yeah, that sounds about right, yeah.
That's only like 5 minutes ago. AJ's going to pipe
2007.
Up 2007. I was only 10 or something.
but, I would have been six. But
yeah. I was only six.
There you go. See? Yes, 2007.
But to me and Stu, that's like yesterday.
Correct.
Hmm. Scary, isn't it?
One other point before we move on from the Ross chat. I'm assuming, Ross, because as part of your kind of your humble persona, is that you've passed your driving theory test and just quietly kept it to yourself because you didn't want to make a big thing of it. I mean, it was your New Year's resolution, and we're now getting towards the middle of November. So where are we at?
Yeah, I found another one, boys.
Okay.
Yeah. I think that there will be obviously a big announcement one day. I will like just say we've got to do a a special podcast.
Oh yeah,
emergency.
Yeah, that's the one. I can bloody think of the word. Bloody hell, my brain's frazzled after having to lead the podcast for a second there with my camera chat. But yeah, I think we'll have to do emergency. I'll just put in the chat. Need a call, lads, and then we just press record, and then we'll say, "Yeah, theory test done." But obviously, that's
never going to happen.
Yeah, it's going to happen. It's going to happen because I now know where I'm going wrong.
What do you?
What you go on?
I'm just winging it too much. I need to stop winging it.
Just not revising.
I am revising, but I just I just
not revise
the last minute. So yeah, going.
It's going wrong because you're not answering the questions correctly.
Well, I got 41, which is not bad going again.
What have you got to get?
43. Ooh. So that's not bad going. I get too confident in the first like 20 questions. I'm like, yeah, got them all right. And then one comes up and I'm like, shit, what is this answer to this one? And then that's when I just fail. So, to be continued.
Yeah. As someone who's worked with you now for a lot of years, the Six revelation years. That you wing things comes quite as a shock to me. I thought you prepared diligently for everything. And yep. I've never forgot anything or indeed forgotten you're meant to be somewhere at a certain time. That doesn't happen.
No,
excellent. Ipswich Town have to be at Spurs this weekend, friends, on Sunday. So let's finish the pod there. I hope you enjoyed that little insight into Rossi's world, by the way, David. Hopefully we've righted that wrong. AJ, I'm going to come to you on this. We've already had a good chat about Spurs. We've given our predictions already, and we're going to do it again before the end of the pod. But you obviously have done your weekly deep dive into the opposition, in this case Spurs. They're seventh in the league, 5 wins, 4 losses, 1 draw, up and down. And as Ross pointed out earlier, they're coming off a big win against Aston Villa, tremendous. But the game before that, they lost at Palace. So they're up and down, they're Spursy, as the classic saying goes. What are you expecting from this game? What can you tell us about Spurs we haven't already mentioned?
Yeah, it's a line that I put in my Meet the Opposition. I'm not sure whether I feel like I can keep it in there. But as Giorgio Chiellini said, it's the history of the Tottenham. This is exactly what they do. This is a team that has chased a trophy for a long time. They only won one in the 21st century, which was the League Cup in 2008. Mauricio Pochettino came close. And since then, since he moved on, they've chopped and changed between Mourinho, Ryan Mason, Nuno Espirito Santo, Antonio Conte, and now Ange Postecoglou. Ange Postecoglou finished 5th in his first season last year. And he's very adamant. He says, well, he got asked earlier this season, said, well, you say that you usually win things in your second season. And he goes, no, mate, I always win things in my second season. So that means that they're seemingly going to lift a trophy this year. they need to be consistent if they're going to do that, because what Tottenham seem to do is go on these really lengthy winning runs where you think, wow, what a team. They'll go and beat, or look at the one they had recently, they won at Coventry, beat Brentford, beat Carabag, had a really big win at Man United, beat Ferencváros, went to Brighton, went 2-0 up, and then went down like a deck of cards. Spursy, essentially. They've had it again fairly recently. They beat West Ham really comfortably, beat AZ Alkmaar, lost to Crystal Palace, and went down with a real whimper. So it seems like they get their confidence going. They think, wow, we're the best team in the world. And then they kind of lose it a bit. So maybe the fact that Tottenham have won two on the bounce, they've beaten Man City in the cup and thrashed Aston Villa, could be a good thing. Maybe that will come here. Ways to hurt them, as I've touched on, the set pieces and kind of crosses into the box. They have lots of corners and they have lots of crosses into the box, but they don't really seem to do a great deal with them, and they don't really seem to be able to defend them that well. And obviously, as I mentioned, the defensive absentees is going to play, well, they'll play a part in that, have their game tonight. But look, but those are the kind of nitpicking bits you can look at. This is a squad that is stacked. It's really good, particularly in forward areas, because Ange Postecoglou doesn't like defending. He doesn't do it. He doesn't believe in it. Fair enough. It's boring anyway. So he put Kulusevski, he's a winger. He plays centre mid now. Why not? Bit of fun. Brennan Johnson, 4 goals. He was rubbish earlier. He was so rubbish that he got so much abuse, he deleted his Instagram. Now he's come back after coming off social media, and he's brilliant. Dominic Solanke is getting on there. Jungmin Son's back in form. So lots of real quality there. Lots of real attacking. They play a ludicrously high line. There's ways to get at them, but God help trying to defend against them. So that's why I've kind of gone with my goalsy prediction, my Gary Goals prediction. It means that they're great fun to watch, but will it hold them back in the long term? Probably, I'd say.
Stewie, this is your first trip to Spurs, isn't it? The new stadium. I remember they went there for a friendly in pre-season a couple of years ago. And I think I remember it was just Andy flying solo for that one. You're away. So this will be your first trip to Spurs. How are you approaching this? What do you think, if anything, that McKenna will do with his side? Because we talked about it on Monday's pod. It feels like there may be something to kind of cling on to in terms of that Chaplin playing the 10, Amari on the right, and maybe Smodics on the left behind the striker. That seemed to work pretty well. Anything else you think in terms of potential changes or debates?
Alex mentioning ludicrously high line there immediately screams George Hurst to me. We looked at Hurst being the favoured choice at Brentford for that reason, that there was a feeling that they had marauding borderline kamikaze centre-halves who go charging off into the other box at times, and that can leave some space in behind. There will certainly be that against Tottenham. So, yeah, I do wonder if this is a George Hurst one. Sammy Schmodics is a kind of a run off the last shoulder in behind man, so I think that it'll be his sort of game. Does that mean Amari continues on the right and Chaplin in the middle? I would think so, based on their performances in the last game. But obviously Burns, you know, maybe you look at Burns as a kind of more of a pacey counter option. I'm not sure. And where that would leave Amari, I don't know. But yeah, I mean, for all the talk about sort of Spursy, and I know this has become the chat around them over a period of years now, I know they had the collapse against Brighton and the defeat against Palace, but they've had a pretty strong start to the season. As I said to you earlier, they're the top goal scorers in the Premier League. Only Liverpool and Forest have conceded fewer goals than them. So far, they're still in the League Cup, I think, through to the quarterfinals, having beaten Manchester City, going along quite nicely in the Europa League, really strong at home. They're a good team. Couple of causes for optimism, but not enough for me. I mean, James Maddison, bit of subplot there, being a sort of former Norwich player. I think, you know, he's been in and out of their side, but contributing quite nicely with goals and assists. That free kick against Villa last weekend was an absolute peach. I'm sure he would quite like to do something against Ipswich. Son back from injury as well, who I think makes a massive difference to them when he's in the team. So, looking forward to seeing the stadium. Hopefully Ross will be in his little photographer's basement while we're dining finely in a nice press room somewhere.
White glove service somewhere. Rossi, the only other thing I guess to mention is clearly there's going to be a change in midfield for this game. Calvin Phillips is suspended, so it's going to be, you'd imagine, Sam Morsey and Jens Kajust in midfield. How do we feel about that pairing? We've spoken before about Kajust being a big, athletic sort of midfielder that you maybe need in the Premier League. Chance to see him alongside Town skipper in this one.
Yeah, looking forward to it. I know AJ put in our chat earlier that he's going to be speaking to him. Or no, you're off tomorrow, aren't you, AJ? Actually, scrap that. Oh, I feel sad now for you because I know you probably look forward to that one.
It's fine. Shu's got it. Shu can do it.
Yeah, but yeah, he's speaking to the press, Jens. My boy from Napoli, obviously Swedish, but boy from Napoli. So yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing him, you know, start at Spurs. Has he started with Sam Morsey yet? Because I don't think he has.
Southampton,
yep, sorry. I've just forgot about the Southampton game because they come thick and fast, these games, although not the Premier League. They come one after the other. Not Saturday, Tuesday. But, you know, bear with me, ladies and gentlemen. But, no, looking forward to seeing him in action with Sam Morsey again. And, yeah, hopefully he can step up.
You've been on tremendous value today, Ross. Let me just say that. so prediction-wise, we've obviously given our predictions. I said 3-1 defeat. What did you boys say? Just remind me.
I went 3-2 defeat.
3-2 defeat. Oh, we've got to say goal scorers, haven't we? Who is going to get Town's goal for me? Connor Chaplin. I'm going to sit with Connor Chaplin.
Damn it. Well, I do it every single week. I was thinking about changing to Connor Chaplin, but I do just...
Stick with Amari.
Every time. Amari. He will score. But I'm really concerned that if I keep doing this, he's going to go a whole season without a goal. I am going to stick with him and go with Amari to score first.
Okay, 3-1 Chaplin, 3-2 Amari. Stewie, what did you say? I can't remember.
Well, we all wanted 3-1 ultimately, didn't we? I upgraded to a 4-1. I'm torn between two. I've just mentioned about George Hurst, but I can't really lay my hat firmly on him starting with the Liam Delap factor as well. And Alex has talked a bit about set-piece vulnerability for Spurs. So that is leading me to Dara O'Shea had a big-headed chance against Leicester in the first half. He had another one where he had a shot that was blocked as well that came from a set-piece. He's playing with quite a nasty back injury at the moment. Seems to be soldiering on through that. But, yeah, I'll go with Dara O'Shea.
And Rossi, just remind me of your pick.
Yeah, defeat as well. 2-1. And I'm going to back my boy, Jens. Why not?
Oh, wow. That would be good.
Yeah, that'd be very tremendous. Nice indeed. It will be a consolation, obviously, but yeah. It's a goal. His first Premier League goal. So, yeah.
So we're all saying defeat. Could still be fun, though. Follow it all with us. by way of segueing into the next question, boys, how many of us are going to bring in or have already brought in Spurs players for their FBL side? This guy.
As I mentioned on the FPL podcast, go listen to that live now on all the best streaming platforms. It's not been great for me. As I think I've said this now the third time around. I'm looking at changes, thinking, how do I want to do it? And the change I want to make would involve a Spurs player coming in. His name's Dominic Solanke. But I'm 0.1 million off it, and I'm tearing my hair out. I'm thinking, but I could change more. Then you're looking at taking -8s. A -8 at this stage feels like sickening, vile, horrible. So don't call me dramatic.
If you haven't noticed, AJ takes this a lot more seriously than everyone else.
Oh, God, yeah. This is essentially a matter of life and death. Yeah. This and the Predictions League.
As a matter of principle, while Chris Wood has been scoring the goals, I've gone, no, I'm not jumping on the bandwagon. He's Alex's player. I'm doing it. Solanke suddenly scores two. Alex has noticed he's in my team. Oh, I'll have him.
He'll have him. I'm going to bring in Son. I'll tell you that right now. I wanted to bring in Johnson as well. I wanted to get rid of Delap and bring in Johnson, but I've just been looking, and Johnson's listed as a midfielder, which is quite annoying. So I can't do that.
Are you just lumping on everyone that's coming up against Town at the moment?
Mate, seems like a solid basis for improving in the game, I think. so I'm definitely going to be bringing Son in for Cole Palmer, who's annoying me. And I might do something with Delap as well, depending on how much money I've got. Rossi, what are you going to do? How many Spurs players have you got?
I already had two Spurs players in my team, so I've not jumped on that. They're going to beat Town and they're going to get loads of points. So I already had Pedro Porro, who is fit, I assume. Ed's been nodded.
As far as I'm aware.
Obviously, they're playing Kalatasaray tonight in Turkey, so he could get injured, which would be good for us. Not for me, in my FPL team. And I'm like, damn it. But I've got Son in my team as well. Although he was on my bench last week, so I didn't know if he was going to start or not. And of course, he started, but he only played just under an hour. So he's not at his very best at the moment. So hopefully he's not his very best at town. But yeah, I'm not. There's no other Spurs players coming in my team because I'm pretty happy with my team. I think you know, they're solid at the moment. Delap's still in my team. I'm going to start Delap in this game as well. And even though I've just predicted Cuse to score, it's like, So hopefully that I'm wrong with my prediction of my first goal scorer, but I am going to start Delap.
Excellent. I've enjoyed your contradictions on today's pod, Ross. Go on, Stu.
You know, you just talked about could still be fun though.
Absolutely, it will be.
Do you want a little game of perspective just to make us feel better about Ipswich Town going to the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, 60,000+ capacity in the Premier League? This time last year, this very day, 7th of November, I've just had a little quick look, drew 2-2 at Rotherham, Ipswich Town. This time the year before that, just having a look again this very day, the 7th of November, which was a Monday, won 3-0 at Bracknell. So just a little reminder of how far we've come.
We're that Paul Rudd gif, aren't we? That look how far we've come. Look at us. Look how far we've come. Another reason to be positive, Stu, just worth throwing at the end of the pod. We've done some digging on sides that have had 5 points after 10 Premier League games. Now, common sense suggests that not many of those would have survived, but you're telling me there is a chance, there's hope.
Yes. Erroneously, I'll hold my hands up to this one, that no team has ever survived after having 5 points, after being winless after 10 games in Premier League history. That's only newly promoted sides that haven't stayed up. There's been a few non-newly promoted sides that have done it, few and far between in recent years. The examples here aren't that relevant to Ipswich because two, basically in the more modern era, it's Newcastle that have done it twice, which probably suggests that they were in a bit of a false position. One year was when they went out and had the Saudi money, then they went out and splashed the cash in January, etc., etc. But of more relevance to Ipswich, I would say, is the teams that have had 5 points or fewer after 10 games. And there's quite a few of them. 38 times there have been teams in this predicament since the Premier League began. Yes, I know top flight football started before then, but we have to draw a line somewhere on these stats. 38 times and 15 of them, so more than a third, went on to survive. And one, two, three of them were newly promoted sides. And I would say the most pertinent examples for Ipswich to look at is Southampton. Back in 2012-13, they'd obviously done exactly what Ipswich had done, back-to-back promotions, got off to a slow start that year, but kind of led by Ricky Lambert, who'd been on that journey through Adam Lallana, plus a few summer signings finally bedding in. They managed to beat the drop. And more recently, Nottingham Forest, of course, who went up after exactly the same period of time as Ipswich, 22 years away, bit of a fallen giant, finally got themselves back to the Premier League. Went out and splashed even more money than Ipswich did in the summer, 160-odd million pounds on, I think, 23 players in the end, and that caused a bit of a stir that summer. They got off to a poor start. They signed Lingard, didn't they, amongst others, that summer. And they managed to go on and survive as well. So it can be done. You're telling me there's a chance.
Yes, you are telling me there's a chance. We're telling you there's a chance. And that chance, or chances, I would say. I hate when I go posh. It's like really subconscious. I've done it all my life since I moved here. I've gone from saying bath to bath. I sound ridiculous when I say it. Chance. That starts at Spurs on Sunday. So, yes, do follow it all with the boys. They will all be there. And if you can't be there, follow it with them. Just a reminder, friends, as we come to the end of this pod, that we are coming up to KOA 500, which we reckon will be that first week in December after, as I've already told you, Town will have beaten Man United and will then beat Crystal Palace at home. Then there'll be KOA 500 to look forward to. I'm making contact, friends, with people who, let's say, have been part of KOA history, who may or may not return for KOA 500. So that's TBD. But what we want is your input into KOA 500. Please email me, mark.heath@newsquest.co.uk, with your little KOA stories, how long you've been listening for, where you listen from. I'm especially keen to hear from people who are far flung across the world. We've had a few from Australia already, but I know from past memory, we've got people as far away as South Korea, New Zealand, all over the world. And I know from looking at our demographics, I think we have listeners in 60 plus countries across the globe. So if you live in a far-flung country and listen to KOA, let us know, and let us know how long you've been listening for. Favorite memories, pictures related to KOA, all that kind of stuff. We've had someone email in this morning confessing to staring at the doctor through his kitchen window. Slightly worrying, Ryan, but you'll be part of the KOA 500. Don't you worry about that. And also, friends, I would normally at this point tell you to use a particular code on an intimate groomer's purveyor on their online store. They're no longer part of KOA. Manscaped, we've cut our ties of 3.5 years, which means, excitingly, friends, there's an opportunity for you to come on board and sponsor this very podcast, or multiple people to sponsor this podcast. We're coming up, friends, to our 2.5 millionth download. That just gives you an idea of the kind of audience you could be potentially in front of. Clearly, we'll do whatever you want. You can have your logo associated, as Manscaped was. She's not so sure we'll do anything you want. But hey, let's talk about money, shall we, before we rule anything out. we can do offer codes that we've done with Manscaped, obviously, and we can even wear clothing associated to your particular brand if you'd like us to. There's pretty much nothing I won't do for some money. and Adidas, if you're interested, do get in touch. Anything else to mention, friends, before we take our leave? We've done 75 minutes. I noticed the pods are getting a bit longer, but there's quite a lot to talk about, isn't there, in the Premier League? Rossi, you've done a special with a Tractor Girls player. Are we still allowed to say Tractor Girls? Or are they moving away from that?
I think they're moving away from it, but it is just easy to say, isn't it? Tractor Girls and stuff. Yeah. I'm sure we're allowed to do it. You know, we can do what we want, can't we? Yeah, there we go. But no, Charlotte Fleming, who is the Ipswich Town women's midfielder, who signed this summer. Great story, really good chat, really good talker. Spoke about her career so far, of course, joining Town. She was coached by Emma Hayes at Chelsea. She made a debut under her. So obviously Emma Hayes recently won the Ballon d'Or for the first, you know, women's coach of the year. So, she spoke about her. She had a bad injury. So she joins the ACL gang with you, Heathy. She suffered that as well, having to go through surgery and other injuries as well. And she was captaining the team at Town in the opening few games because Maria Boswell was injured. So she spoke about that and just her journey so far. And of course, this Town women's team are doing pretty well this year. Unbeaten in the league. And they go to Cheltenham this weekend on Sunday. Well, we're in Spurs. They're in a little Cheltenham town. So good luck to them. But yeah, check it out. Available on all platforms.
And the other thing we've had feedback is that people have been loving your KOA specials, Rossi, with ex-players, which we tend to drop during the international break. So who have you got coming up for us in the upcoming international break?
So there's a few that I'm still in talks with. We have to rearrange, so I won't announce them just yet. But I have recorded two episodes, which we'll discuss in terms of putting out. One is Paul Mason, who played for Town in the 90s. Really good player, really good chat. A boy from Liverpool who had a weird career. He sort of like came out of the professional game at a young age and then went to Holland to work as a builder with his brother. Then signed for a Dutch top flight side and, of course, came back to England, played for Aberdeen, then came to Ipswich and played in the 90s for Town. A really good chat, Paul. That'll be out. And also Thomas Gardso, the Danish centre-back who played for Town in the Premier League in the final Premier League season in 2002, then also part of Joe Royal's team in that first season back in the First Division. Really good chat with him. He's now back in good old Denmark. We also brought up Jonas Knudsen because he actually played alongside him and was sort of part of that deal when he joined Ipswich. What did I say wrong there?
You said good old Denmark.
The nation that tickled of Denmark. Me as pleased, well for some reason.
Always pleased to hear that they fall into the good old Ross.
Good old respect Denmark. Yeah. But yeah, good chat to those two. They'll be available during the international break.
Excellent. And if you do live in good old Denmark and listen to the show, let us know because Ross will be especially keen to hear from you. AJ, Stewie, anything from you before we take our leave?
When we started recording this, Kieran McKenna was the 13th longest serving manager in England. He's now the 12th.
Who's gone?
The longest serving manager in the Championship. I know we don't care about it, but Mark Robbins sat
in
commentary, which I think is
interesting.
Fairly, that's a heavy one. He was third in that list. Had been there since 2017. Got them up from League Two into League One, into the Championship. FA Cup semi-finalist, beaten in the Championship playoffs. Sacked by Coventry.
They lost to Derby, didn't they?
Lost to Derby last night. They've not had a best of starts. They've been a bit hit and miss. Their fans don't seem too happy with that one, and I think I can understand why.
Okay. Stu, anything from you? Have you got any breaking news you can share with us?
No breaking news. One more reason for optimism going into this one. Ipswich have beaten Spurs in the last three meetings.
Oh, yes.
Did the double over them on the way to relegation in that season that Ross has just mentioned. John McGruel with a late winner at Portman Road. Alan Armstrong with a late winner at White Hart Lane. Some might say Ipswich v Tottenham is the Jason Dizel derby.
Oh, yeah.
If we're plucking out players that have played for both. I mean, I'm stretching a little bit there, but as you can see, still some books there. So we're getting into November time. There it is in all its glory. If you want a little Christmas present, perfect little Christmas present.
Oh, perfect. Yeah.
Yeah. Hit me up. JasonDizelBook@gmail.com. I'll shut up about it soon. Officials, probably worth quickly mentioning them for the weekend, given the controversy of last season. Darren England is the referee this weekend. You might remember him from the Luis Diaz goal being wrongly ruled out with the VAR cock-up and check complete when it really wasn't complete. So that's Darren England, who is the referee this weekend. John Brooks and Mark Scholes on VAR.
I really, really hope that come Monday we're not talking about VAR again, because I'm bored of it now. I just want a game with no kind of big talking points from that point of view. I want a game where it's Town win, ideally. That would be lovely, wouldn't it? Sue just essentially guaranteed they will, because they've beaten Spurs three times in a row. So friends, there we go. We've set you up. We've given you a lot of chat. Ross has played a starring role in today's pod. I hope you're happy, David Johnson, that we've put right that wrong. Obviously now Town head to Spurs. We're all saying they're going to lose, but Stu's saying there is a chance they might win. Let's hope that happens. Have a great weekend, friends, whatever you're doing, and we'll be back on Monday to talk to you about it all over again. We'll speak to you then.
To modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.